right. Well, here we are. To dream again. To dare again. To feel enjoyment and happiness again. Or for the first time. To realize this is living. Be inspired. To see your life as an exciting journey of discovery. With your host of the Inspire Possibility Show, Mark Sussman.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Inspire Possibility Show, the show that makes a difference, a show that will hopefully inspire you to do great things, things that perhaps you had on the back burner, things that maybe you were afraid to do. And this will give you inspirations when you hear about somebody that had a breakthrough in their life, somebody that made a courageous decision. And I think for a lot of us, it really comes down to making courageous decisions, decisions that really acknowledge that we need to make a change in our life and we need to go for it and to really be honest with ourselves. My guest this afternoon is Dr. Rajiv Partee. He is known as the heartbreak doctor. And what's interesting is that when you hear about his background, you're wondering, how did he get that title? So Dr. Rajiv Partee is a world-renowned heart anesthesiologist and was chief of anesthesiology at Bakersfield Heart Hospital for more than a decade before having a life-changing near-death experience. Trained in Western medicine, Dr. Partee is also a student of Eastern medicine, which has led him to formulate an integrative approach to total wellness. He's also a co-active coach. He also is a relationship coach, Mars-Venus coach, trained by John Gray. He's an Ayurvedic practitioner. He's got a lot of other titles. And his first book was called Dying to Wake Up. And that is actually the true story of his astounding near-death experience, his subsequent transformation, and the wisdom he brought back from the afterlife that actually he brings to his experience to the near-death of his marriage. So this is going to be interesting to hear about this, to see how he goes from that to really look into his relationship. So, Rajiv, Dr. Partee, welcome to the Inspire Possibility Show.
Oh, I'm very, very honored to be here.
Well, good. So are you going to enlighten us today in terms of all this stuff I said about you? I know you've actually, I know your commitment is to becoming a better person and working on yourself to have more insights. And do you think that, do you think we get to a place where we stop working on ourselves?
You know, like it's a continuous improvement, but I'm not going to get you to help you to become more enlightened. Actually, my belief is we all are enlightened by birth, by our basic core level. But there's dust on the mirror, and all I help you is to clean the mirror and see your own true self.
Mm-hmm. So you had a quite a background. You were involved in Western medicine as an anesthesiologist. And what exactly happened when you had this near-death experience? What were the – I know that other guests I've had on the show have talked about that, had written books about this. What happened? Tell us about that, about what happened and what that was like.
Yeah, you know, like in August of 2008, I was diagnosed with prostate cancer. And I got it removed totally, prostatectomy, so I was cured of prostate cancer, but it left me with incontinence and a lot of pain. So in December of 2010, I went to UCLA and a professor implanted a special device so I can control my bladder functions. And unfortunately, I don't know what to say, unfortunately, and now looking back, fortunately, it got infected. It was so badly infected that I could go into, I had 105 fever, I was trembling like a leaf. Like they took me into the operating room for an emergency surgery to take the device out. Otherwise, when it becomes septic, then it becomes 70% mortality. So during the emergency surgery, I experienced the near-death experience. Went to different realms, and in short, when I woke up, I was a different person.
And you say, you know, a lot of people talk about these near-death experiences when they have them. What did you, what was your description of your memory of that actual experience? What was, I know people describe it in different ways, and I'm just curious about how you describe it.
That's a very good question. So approximately 20 minutes into surgery, I was near the ceiling of the operating room, and I could see the surgeons operate on me, and the dirty fluid was oozing out, and the anesthesiologist even told a joke. And first I thought maybe I'm hallucinating, you know, because there is a drug called ketamine, which is like PCP, and it causes dissociative anesthesia and hallucinations. And when I checked the record, the ketamine was not used. And from there, I went to different realms. The first realm I went was rim of a hellish area where I could hear the souls wailing and crying. And there I asked for help. Why am I here? What, you know, karma I have done? And of all the people, my father who had died 20 years ago showed up. And in the background, I had a very difficult relationship with my father because he was a product of partition of India when there was genocide on both sides, Muslim killing Hindus, Hindus killing Muslim. And we were stuck on the Pakistan side of the border. So he had to escape to India lying among dead bodies. So he was a very frustrated man and he took all his anger on me. But then I realized that he did love me, but he could not express it rightly. He came to my aid there. And then
You're in surgery, you're talking about now? You're in surgery and you have this vision of your father?
Exactly. I'm in surgery, yeah. Exactly, I was in surgery and my heart rate had dropped and maybe stopped also. And then I was having this experience. Going back to where my father was, he told me some words which he had told me on his deathbed. He told in Indian language, but a rough translation is, "My son, if you keep your conscience clear, the divine, the universe will take care of you." Like, bottom line is, we have to be truthful and authentic to our own selves and not just for outside world.
So did you feel that prior to this experience in 2008, you weren't being that way? You weren't being true to yourself and being authentic?
You know, like for me that time, I was not truly authentic to myself. I had a mask on my face. It was a different vibes I gave outside because before my near-death experience, I was a very high-charging alpha male. You know, to get be successful at any cost, even if I have to step on people's toes and to make as much money as I could. So much so, I was actually a pediatrician before, and then making very little money because pediatrician is the lowest paid specialty in America. Uh-huh. I went ahead and did a specialty in anesthesiology, and especially heart surgery, because that's right now, I think in America, anesthesiologists are the third best paying profession. So I was very materialistic. I used to have a Hummer, a sports BMW. I lived in a 10,000 square foot golf course and a lake. movie theater. So for me, money and success was very, very important.
And
I wore a mask in front of public.
And so then when after this experience, you had this awakening and you made, something came to you and you made certain decisions.
Exactly. I sold my 10,000 square foot house. I was a different person, you know, like my nature towards my wife and my, especially with my eldest son, my father was showing up in me. Like I had forced him to go to medical school and he had could not make it and he was dropping out of the school. Actually, he was kicked out because he failed so many times.
Uh-huh.
And it happened after my near-death experience. So I was very calm and collected, and I told him whatever he wants to do is acceptable to us. Then he went into computers, and he is very successful now. He's just completing his final year. And if I was my old self, I would scream, angry, told him to get out of the house, this, that. But that's why my family believe that something happened, that dad is so different.
Well, you know, the question I have is that when I know there's been a lot of books on these near-death experiences, but it sounds like also for you, you had a situation where you had serious surgery, you almost died, and I think that when people are facing a serious surgery or anything when they almost die, I think there's a certain sense of gratitude they have when they survive it. And I don't know if you necessarily call that near-death experience, but I know it's that realization that life is short and it's brought to their attention in that moment. So then at some level, they're just more grateful. They just have more of an open heart and realize, and this is all that, you know, today is today, and I'm grateful for what I have, and
mm-hmm.
I just got to go on from here. Do you see the difference?
Oh, very big difference. I actually started writing every day, and I write it till today. Three things I'm really grateful for. And actually, this guy, I forgot his first name, Emmons, he at University of Davis, he wrote a whole book on gratitude. And people who have gratitude live longer, are happier, have better relationships.
Right.
So, and it doesn't have to be big things. You know, I sometimes write, I'm thankful for the food I eat. You know, how many people
right.
go hungry? You know, we have a roof over our head.
So the one thing is after that, you started getting into I'm familiar with, actually, I mentioned Emmons in my first book, Dancing on the River, Navigating Life Changes. And I have a chapter on gratitude. Yeah, and I am familiar with his work. And also there's heart math also, which is in Santa Cruz, near Santa Cruz, where you're going to be moving to. So that's
I knew heart math was in California. I thought it was near Santa Rosa somewhere. No,
it's down, at least it was down in the Santa Cruz area. So I want to come back to, you had this sense of gratitude. But I was saying that, you know, when you have this situation to where you have serious surgery where you can almost die and you survive, I just think that it changes you, you know. And but for you, you were changed and you went from giving up a material existence to really looking more for meaning in your life. That
exactly,
kind
you know,
of,
like. My favorite book is Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl.
Great book.
You know, He talks about meaning in life is more important than pursuit of happiness. You know, and that really, really became my purpose. Like my life mantra became, life is not just about existing, but about thriving and giving back.
So what I'm curious about, the big question is that, you know, we when I got information from your publicist. The big thing was the heartbreak doctor. So you had this near-death experience. So kind of lead us now to this idea of how you're an anesthesiologist, you're not a psychologist, how you came up with this idea of being known as a heartbreak doctor. What happened in your life? Again, I always come with the premise that we teach what we want to learn, and we
exactly.
write about
I believe that
personal
too.
Experiences.
Yeah.
So I know that something was going on in your life. So tell us how you went from this experience, and this is 2008, it's 9 years later. So what happened there to you came up? So was there a heartache in your life? And I like this idea of, for so many people, is how do you heal heartbreak? Some people never do. Some people never heal heartbreak. And it just, they live with it the rest of their life. They never get out of it. And I think that,
yeah.
So what happened in your life, and what insights did you gain that can help other people?
Yeah, what happened was I was a changed person after my physical near-death experience. Like I helped, of course, with my wife's consent, we sold our big house. I said I'm going to go for more consciousness-based healing, and I gave up the materialistic lifestyle. Like I sold my Hummer, which was only giving me 8 miles per gallon. Because previously I didn't care about the environment. And my sports BMW changed for a hybrid Toyota. All I needed was a good car and environmental friendly. And initially my marriage was very improved a lot. That's what I thought. But down the road, my wife felt lonely or whatever the reason was. She literally had an affair with my best friend.
Wow.
And before I came
That's
to know
huge.
About the affair, that was huge. And before I came to know about the affair, about 6 months before that, she told me, I've not loved you for 2 years. And that time I did not know about the affair, but 2 years I've not loved you was a shock to me. It was like I described in my new book, Dying to Love, as if somebody put a dagger to my heart and twisted it. It still brings me emotions right now thinking of that. And then I literally started having chest pains, deep aching in the heart. I took pain medicines, I took Motrin, and anything would not touch it. And finally I saw my doctor, and my father had a heart attack when he was 41, to make sure it's
wow.
not coronary artery disease. I got a CAT angiogram done. My coronaries were clean. So then I did some research. Actually, people who have love trauma, just like a trauma, other traumas like war trauma or child abuse trauma or any other trauma, there is a condition known as heartbreak syndrome, which people can die from it. And people develop PTSD symptoms like I had, post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms, very hypervigilant, very angry, very short-tempered, all the symptoms which go with it. And that's how, then the interesting thing happened is 6 months after my wife tells me that she doesn't love me, I found out about the affair from some random text. I was shocked. I was really shocked. Totally betrayed. Because my belief was in my wife, literally, that even my son said later, that son can come out from west, but my wife cannot betray me. Or she will rather die than betray me. That was my belief.
Uh-huh.
From there, we signed. We said, I cannot live with a woman like this. So we went for a friendly divorce, but it was not fully completed. So we were sitting in the lawyer's office, and I was living in Marin that time to sign the divorce papers in a final agreement. And that was in December 2016. And she said, some of your arguments.
So this is really now that's just a year ago.
Yeah. And then she said,
yeah.
why don't we give it, you want to give it a try for 6-7 weeks and let's complete our 30 years of marriage. I said, you know, I've lived with her for 30 years almost. Why not another 6-8 weeks? And by God's grace, that 6-8 weeks changed to such a wonderful marriage, wood touch, that we really had post-traumatic growth, PTG. And I individually had post-traumatic growth, and our marriage is blossoming. And the key was from my near-death experience, the physical near-death experience, the message I always have about stalking was forgive, love, and heal.
Forgive, love, and heal?
Yeah. That was the biggest message from my dying to wake up.
Uh-huh.
But who knew that few years down the road, what I'm preaching, I'll have to practice it myself. It was very hard, Mark, but I practiced
it. I can imagine.
And I forgave my wife. And it has been wonderful after that. But forgiveness is the key to a happy marriage or any relationship. You know, you don't have to have big issues like this. The small issues
you know,
can be forgiven.
It's interesting. In my first book, Dancing on the River, I also have a chapter on forgiveness, one on gratitude.
Wow.
And I do mention Viktor Frankl also. And so the one of forgiveness, I talk about three levels of forgiveness. First level is forgiving self, forgiving yourself for all the things that you feel like you failed in and all the things maybe you've done to other people that you feel bad about. So forgiving yourself and then forgiving others. Just like you did with your wife and your best friend. And then the other is forgiving God. Because I think at certain levels, you know, we get mad at God and wonder with all the atrocities in the world and all the unfairness, we start to question that. So I looked at it from the perspective of three things. And I know forgiveness is I think the misconception about forgiveness is if you forgive somebody, you're letting them get away with it, which is a myth. And I think once people realize that they're not condoning the behavior, it's really for you. So you're forgiving somebody else. It's for you. So you don't have to carry these weights around all the time.
I fully agree with you. You know, Buddha said that if you're holding resentment in your hand, within your heart, it is like holding a burning coal in your hand to throw at somebody, or drinking the poison yourself that somebody is going to, else will die.
Exactly.
You know, exactly, because you're forgiving for your own self. And Mark, very interesting thing is, in my first book, Dying to Wake Up, I talk about these three levels of forgiveness too. And I actually wrote, in my book published, I wrote a letter to forgiving myself. I wrote a letter forgiving my dad. That time my wife's thing was not there. And quote-unquote, I wrote a letter of forgiving God. These are exactly in my book. Yeah.
Wow.
You know, exactly I talk about it. So that's, you know, like we have a lot of commonality in synchronicity.
Amazing. Amazing.
Yeah.
So what would be, I know we're kind of bringing our conversation near the end. And so when somebody said, I heard Dr. Partee talk about healing a broken heart. What would be their takeaway? What would be their their formula? Again, you said forgive the other person, right?
Yeah, love the other person, and you
love will the other person. Forgive them.
Yeah.
And what else?
And you will experience and you will heal. You know, I don't know how much time we have, but I will end up with. You know, when me and my wife reconciled, I took her out for dinner, and I said, "What do you want from me?" And she said, "Respect, care, and love." And honestly, I gave her that in that order. The order she said was very important too.
So respect,
you know, not just love, care, that you care for the other person, you cherish the other person, and then you love also.
Uh-huh.
And the main thing was my marriage was very vertical marriage before my near death of my marriage. You know, I was at the top, like old times, one generation ago, then my wife, then the kids. I call it a vertical marriage. But now I call it a horizontal marriage. Me and my wife are different but equal. I respect her opinions. I respect care for her. I cherish her from my heart. You know, cherishing is a very good word. I love her. You know, it has love and respect both in it.
So really, it's cherish the other person is what you're saying.
Yeah. You know, like, and from heart, you know, like, you don't have to say even words. Your body talks about it. Small actions make a very big difference. I'll just give you one example. She loves eating papayas in the morning. And one day the papayas were gone, were finished. I myself went, she didn't ask, I went to the grocery store and bought papayas. When she came home, she literally cried. It was a small thing that my husband cared for me, cared for my feelings.
Mm-hmm. So a way, with again, back to this idea of coming, I want to come back to this healing the broken heart, because so many people have been there, and yet where they're in the middle of it, it's sometimes it's not about, the other person is gone, the other person's moved on. So,
yeah.
You know, the other person, right, that has rejected you, they've moved on in their life. Or it could be somebody, you know, somebody passes away, too. But,
yeah.
So I guess what I'm saying is, the healing part, if somebody's moved on, they're no longer in your life, yet you have this heartbreak, do what you just said, does that really applicable? I mean, terms of respect, they're gone, they're no longer in your life. So how do you get out of your funk?
Yeah, you know, like, first of all, when I have clients like this, you know, who the partner has moved on, my practice is not just helping for people who reconcile, but people who have not reconciled. And
uh-huh.
I ask them to write a gratitude letter to their previous partner, not to give up the resentment, to forgive the previous partner, and to make
uh-huh.
yourself strong, and to make yourself strong, to work on your own self. Like I talk, the way out of heartbreak is to go within. That you became your core strong and have a transformation.
So you're saying
then,
for them to write a gratitude letter to their ex?
Yeah. And what did the gratitude, they learned from the ex? You know, like, what did he, and to learn from things, what they contributed to it too.
Mm-hmm.
And how I could forgive my wife
right.
was because I took responsibility for my action. I was not there. I was busy with my giving lectures, speeches, and gone for one time. I went to India for a meditation camp for 2 months. Not caring what
wow.
she will be going through.
Yeah. So part of it, you know, with the forgiveness letter and the gratitude letter is you don't even have to send it.
Oh,
with
no.
I usually send it, not to send it. Yeah.
Yeah. I actually ask my clients to burn it, you know. You know, like,
to do
let
what?
Become ashes. To burn it, you know, in a fire pit. You know,
right, so
you don't want to
they feel self-conscious.
Be.
Right, you just do it to kind of open up. So we're kind of ending our time together, so I want to thank you for being our guest. And your first book's Dying to Wake Up, and what's the title of your new book is?
Dying to Love.
Dying to Love. I like that, Dying to Wake Up, Dying to Love. And these are available on Amazon and some of the independent bookstores?
Yes, sir. They are marked available.
And if somebody wants to find out about, to talk to you about what you do, how do they get a hold of you?
You know, my website is theheartbreakdoctor.com. and there's a contact there, and they can fill up the contact form, and the email comes directly to me.
All right. So I want to thank you for being our guest. And one last thought. Well, I always like to ask my guests, what inspires you right now?
You know, what inspires me is the wonderful relationship I have with my wife. And I want to help others achieve the same.
Well, thank you, Dr. Rajiv Partee, the Heartbreak Doctor, for being our guest on the Inspire Possibility Show. And for you out there, as you know, every week we have some amazing people enlighten us, teach us, inspire us. And until next week, journey on.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Inspire Possibility Show with Mark Susnow. To learn more about Mark Susnow, go to inspirepossibility.com and click on the contact button. Schedule a complimentary visit with Mark or email him at mark@inspirepossibility.com. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine.